You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
This feature is brought to you by 91, investing for a world of change. And while we still await the announcement from the president around the government of national unity, trying to figure out what this means for the markets has been our task for the last couple of days. Actually, since the election results have been announced, I've had various conversations around this. Last week, I spoke to 91's CEO and founder, Hendrik du Toit, around what it means for the asset management space. And I thought we'd continue along a similar path in a conversation. I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager at 91, Sumesh Chetty, to take a look at where we stand at the moment and what it means for South Africa going forward. Good evening, Sumesh. Thanks so much for taking the time. We've seen the JSE make all sorts of decisions and movements over the last couple of weeks, the Rand as well. This government of national unity really has South Africans and the global markets up in arms. When we look at where we stand now, what are some of the risks that still persist with regards to this government of national unity, and how do we sort of interpret them? I mean, I took a look at the markets today. They didn't have the best day, and I suppose it could be in part due to the delay in announcing this new cabinet.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. 100%, it is the delay in the announcement of the cabinet. And also, don't forget, the market has actually gone up by about 12%. I think it was from about March until the election. So there was a lot of hope actually priced into the market. And in fairness, the GNU, or the potential for a GNU, was a much better outcome than I think anyone could have expected. And now what we're faced with is this political rhetoric, the uncertainty around who gets what, the jostling for position. It's really the kind of like political argy-bargy that now starts. And the market doesn't like that degree of uncertainty. I think the market would have expected this to go a lot smoother. But I think what a lot of people need to remember is South Africa doesn't really have much experience with GNUs, you know, unlike the European situation, for example. We had a GNU in 1994, for those of you listeners that remember, but, you know, that fell apart in 1996. And I think there's a far different power dynamic that exists within the government today. You know, back then you had an ANC that had more than 60%, and now you have an ANC that has 40%. I think if you look at the DA's position, they think that the ANC is significantly weakened. So I think this political argy-bargy is going to continue for a while. It's going to bring volatility to the markets. There's going to be uncertainty.
Sumesh, something else that has the markets uncertain and concerned is, of course, the other side of what drives things like the South African Rand, and that's the US picture. For months, as long as I can remember, probably for years now, we all tried to sit there and say, okay, this is where inflation is going to peak. This is when interest rates are going to start happening. This is how many rate cuts we're going to have. And every single time, the market has gotten that wrong, to the extent that even at the start of this year, 7 rate cuts expected for the US. And now we're even wondering if we'll get one this year. So where do we kind of sit on that US picture, and how is it still influencing the market?
Yeah, so I think what the market's gotten wrong is this this view on inflation normalizing, and it's the concept of normal. And I think, you know, the period from, let's call it 2000 to up until COVID, 2020, that was the abnormal period where you had inflation of about 2% or less in the US. And this goes back decades. You know, it started after the Second World War when the US decided that it would be the policeman to the world and would patrol the waterways of the world. And it allowed a lot of companies in the world to actually start manufacturing and shipping goods across continents in relative security. You know, you didn't have pirates that were actually attacking their ships. And there were a lot of other events that happened throughout history. You know, the fall of the Soviet Union, the fall of the Berlin Wall, it brought a lot of manufacturing capacity into the world in terms of cheap labor. And it happened again in 2001. China joined the World Trade Organization, and they started exporting deflation to the rest of the world and happily taking on carbon emissions. And that sweet spot, you know, which was coupled with American companies starting to enjoy just-in-time manufacturing, just-in-time inventories, it really brought inflation down in the world. But that those forces, they're reversing. You know, look at what's happening in the Red Sea right now. Shipping lanes are, ships going through the Red Sea are at risk. They're going around the Cape of Good Hope. You've got rhetoric around tariffs being imposed from the US and from Europe on China. COVID has really highlighted the weakness in terms of supply chains. So outsourcing or offshoring isn't so clear anymore. Maybe you should be onshoring. Maybe you need to diversify your supply chains. You know, that cost is going to go up. Maybe you need to hold higher inventories. So when we look at inflation, we're saying the last 20 years have been the anomaly. You actually need to go back a little further in time and say, hey, wait a minute. Actually, inflation potentially needs to be higher than 2% rather than lower than 2%. So maybe it's 2.5, maybe it's 3. We're not suggesting it's 5 or even the 9 that we saw back in what was it, 2022 or 2023. And as a result of that, we think that interest rates need to be higher for longer. But, you know, even if you're of the view that inflation is going down, the U.S. really is driven by the 10-year bond. And what we're struggling with is why, even if interest rates are cut at the short end, why that 10-year yield needs to fall so dramatically that it'll create even further stimulus for the U.S. economy or for U.S. markets as a whole. So when we look at interest rates, we say, wait a minute, it's higher for longer. You've got to be very careful about the last 20 years. Look to the past for more clarity on where interest rates need to go. And off the back of that, you're probably going to see the strong dollar continue for a little longer, especially if in an environment where growth is weak in Europe and they're cutting rates and you expect the UK to cut rates, you know, ultimately the dollar just becomes all that more attractive for individuals.
Sumesh, you touched on something around the global situation, almost a sense of de-globalization, so to speak, where right. for that period where we had globalization, everything was more efficient, it was cheaper and all of that. And now you're saying that we have to price in that inflation could potentially never return to 2% and a new normal could possibly be 2.1 or 2.2 or 2.3%. When we look at that, does that present new global risks in the market? And if so, how do you then position a portfolio to then say, okay, we're almost resetting the what was the base levels, whatever base levels were in play across all of the world, those are now being reset potentially a little higher than before. How do you then position a portfolio and looking at the fact that a lot of portfolios are global portfolios, including yours?
So what you've got to be careful of are effectively what are high duration stocks or stocks that are highly dependent on much lower interest rates going forward, or even those stocks that have a lot of debt on their balance sheets. So, you know, a couple of years ago, people were talking about unprofitable tech and how unprofitable tech was so dependent on very low interest rates. Now, I know it's very easy to kind of point a finger at NVIDIA and say, wait a minute, that's a high multiple, that's a tech stock. But I'm not talking about the likes of an NVIDIA. So you've really got to think hard about the type of stocks you include in the portfolio. The other issue with the expectation that interest rates are coming down and that, you know, growth is just going to go to the moon off the back of that is you have a lot of unloved stocks in the world today. So, you know, the old consumer staple group, the likes of the Nestle's, the likes of the Johnson & Johnson's that have just done absolutely poorly off the back of this expectation of growth going on forever and interest rates coming down. So when you think about the global environment and, you know, the two things that need to happen here, global environment as a global investor, be very careful about those high multiples that are predicated on interest rates coming down and remaining low. And then when you think about it from the context of a South African investor, you've got to be very careful about that macro overlay before you get the fundamentals correct. And what I mean by that fundamental, you know, it's not just about the PEs, but let's look at the opportunity set as it exists. 99% of opportunities exist outside of South Africa when you think about equities. And yet you have this home bias, or even let's say this regulatory bias, that keeps people investing in SA stocks. So this isn't even a political view, but it's just if you were to manage a diversified portfolio, the majority of your capital should be offshore. Starting from that perspective, and then adding, well, what is the growth offshore relative to the growth locally? What is that interest rate risk that you face offshore? I mean, very easily, you can find opportunities that are far better offshore, priced at more appropriate multiples than you're finding in SA. So take the Gears out of the equation, the Gears about a potential GNU, for example. Yes, when people look at SA stocks, they see a low multiple. They think this is absolutely fantastic. But what most investors forget, the problem that we have that offshore global component doesn't have, you have an incredibly high cost of capital where our bonds are sitting at about 11 to 11.5%. That represents a cost of debt, a cost of equity is even higher. And then you have low growth. So if you have sales growing at somewhere between 7 and 8%, let's say, and profits growing somewhere between 8 and 10%, that just isn't enough to get you to that current rating of about 10 times in our market. Our market should be closer to 8 times. But now what's interesting, at the beginning of this conversation, I said the market was up about 12% prior to the election. That almost doesn't matter when people get excited. But ultimately, the hard yards that have to happen in this country, you've got to see investment happening by both locals and internationals, and you've got to see job creation. And that's where global continues to win out over local.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye on that and see how that continues to shape up. There's certainly a lot of commentary at the moment going around saying that potentially markets like the US markets are overvalued, but we're seeing that that doesn't really matter, as Sumesh has just mentioned. Thanks so much for those insights, Sumesh. We'll leave it at that. Sumesh Shetty, Portfolio Manager at 91. This feature was brought to you by 91, investing for a world of change.
When it comes to investing, we have a steady hand when things get shaky. Volatility is inevitable, but for active investment managers like us, it presents opportunities. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app, and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.